You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This gardening feature is brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humans Garden Center.
It's 10:30 and time for the Garden Zone with David Parker from Budding Inspirations and our sponsor, Jeremy Fenn from Harry Humans Garden Center. Good morning, and welcome back.
Mornings, how morning. Are you? Saw you 2 weeks ago. How are you, Mr. Fenn? Haven't seen you for a while. You good?
Yeah.
I hear you having some house troubles.
Yeah.
So sorry, Mr. Fenn. Anyway, Jeremy, so we had a discussion. I see you got some wonderful notes. I'm going to put the pressure on you today. So I'm very honest about what I do, and I love what I do. But even for me, I find it very difficult sometimes to determine a disease or a fungus. Even, Doug's been amazing to me this year from your nursery, giving me a lot of help on lawns. But mm-hmm. I thought that what we could try and do achieve in this situation, Jeremy, is maybe just let people know just the basic things to look for so they can determine whether it is a fungus or if it's a disease. Because obviously each thing takes a different type of application, Jeremy,
yeah,
in order to sort it out. And obviously you have the knowledge of plentiful, and obviously everyone can come to beautiful Harry Gibbons there and get whatever they need. But I think the first step is to obviously try and always identify what the situation is. Sometimes it's not easy, and sometimes you just got to do a general inspection and do and maybe even apply an insecticide or a fungicide, etc. But I thought we could open up with that. I know we also want to let the people know what to do for the month of October, so maybe we could spend 15 minutes on just this, and then we can go into that sheet over there for the month. Yeah. How does that sound, Mr. Fenn?
We can try.
Well, yeah, cool. As I said, the ball's in your court. So, yeah.
So what I want to say is that things are seasonal. So sometimes when someone comes in and says, okay, I've got a problem with this, and they don't bring a sample and they don't bring a picture, then what I can do for them is ask them, you know, some basic questions. But then it is also to do with the seasons. So like at the end of we've had a wet winter now, and like if someone comes in with an indoor plant that's not looking its best, and they say they can't see any insects, then my mind would first jump to fungus 100%. Because the soil has been staying too moist.
100%.
Even though they've hardly been watering, just the soil is not drying out. Yeah. And then because of that, there's a chance of some sort of powdery mildew or some other mildew getting into that plant and onto the leaves. And then I would say to them, okay, well, is there like a furry thing on the leaves? And if they say yes, then it's obviously we've identified that it's a powdery mildew. And then either they spray with a fungicide, or they just wait it out. If it's really bad, then they're going to have to spray.
Okay.
But otherwise, yeah, you could possibly wait it out. And so that would be one example of something that would be happening now after the wet winter.
So it's so funny you say that, because obviously those would be people that have left pots maybe on a patio outdoors, mm-hmm. that think they're not getting water. But, you know, the wind in Cape Town takes rain at 90-degree angles.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So it can get in anywhere it wants to get in. But something that I've noticed, Jeremy, on the opposite side of that coin is if people have pots in the indoor of the house, Jeremy, I've always noticed that when people don't really know, the funniest part is the first thing that all laymen in the gardens assume is that it's lack of water.
Yes.
And what happens is they water it. And then what happens is it gets worse, and they think, oh, it's dry and it's stuff, and they give it more water. And ironically, what they're doing is they're causing the fungus mm-hmm. by overwatering. And I sort of give my clients some feedback, and I tell them to do the opposite, because I find that it's very easier to identify if a plant's looking dry, sad from no water, because the whole plant just sort of whoops and willows, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't see any moldy, you don't see any insects, you just see the plant weeping. And the easiest way to tell is to actually allow the plant to get to that point, and you literally give it one cup of water, because a plant that needs water, when it gets it, literally stands up within 10 minutes of getting that water.
Yeah,
and that is a very easy way that I try and tell my clients to try and assess if it's a fungus or if it's too little water. In my opinion, it's, once you get that idea, it's quite easy to see the difference.
Yes.
But even I am battling with some of my own indoor plants, and I think I've overwatered one, so it's important to know.
That's the thing. You just see something happening to your plant. Oh, it must be missing, lacking water, and then you just nail it with more water, when you're going the wrong way.
100%.
And then, in terms of like insects and stuff, there's, the common culprits. Yes. There's the aphid, which usually are sitting on the very new shoots. So those are quite easy to spot, the little plant lice,
they call it. You can see them all over the roses when that's the
exactly.
time of year.
So on the buds or on the very tips of the plants, you can identify the aphids. Then the other one that's very common would be the scale, and that's the little dome-shaped brown things that are on the backs of the leaves and sometimes on the tops of the leaves. And that's also quite easy to identify. So then you can
get that along the lemons, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, lemons.
The phyla when it starts curling a little bit.
Yeah, the one that always gets it, if you have a bay leaf tree, you're always going to get scale. It's just, I don't know how it happens, but the bay leaf attracts the scale like crazy.
100%.
And then the third one that's also quite easy to identify is something that looks like cotton wool. It's the mealybug.
Yes.
And that's when it sort of congregates where maybe like you've got the stem and then another leaf coming out, and there's that little, like, I don't know what, that little corner, that little crux of where the two things are splitting. And they like to be in that sort of position, maybe because it's more sheltered or something like that. But that's where they congregate. So you'll see like this cotton wool. And that's where you have to do a little bit more research, because the cotton wool, you could think, oh, no, this is now a fungus. But it's actually an insect.
Insect, 100%.
So the fungus wouldn't really be in that position where it's coming between the leaf and the stem.
The fungus generally sits more on the soil, doesn't it?
Well, it could be on the soil, or it could be on the actual leaves.
Yeah.
So it's on the leaves rather than where the leaves come out.
Okay.
So that's where you can see. So what you might need to do in that instance is actually, bring a sample in, or
of course, it's bring samples in.
Yeah, or you can actually squeeze that cotton wool, and if you squeeze the cotton wool and like a brown gunky stuff comes out, then you're squishing the insects, and then you've got mealybug.
100%.
So then you can sort that out. But and if you take the cotton wool or the furry stuff and you just rub it and nothing happens, it just sort of disappears, then it's probably a fungus, and then you would have to treat it.
Yeah, which is borderline the mildew, the powdery mildew.
Probably a
same thing.
Yeah,
so exactly. a lot of people don't realize that it can be as easy as just actually taking, I don't know if you sell them at your nursery, but I know you get wet wipes for plants.
Used to, yeah.
Because a lot of people don't realize that, remember, the leaf of the plant is its life. It's its photosynthesis. Photosynthesizing point. Wow, say that five times fast. So that's where all the magic happens. Leaf absorbs the sun, the plant absorbs the sun through its leaves, and then obviously that turns down into CO2 and then emits the oxygen and blah, blah, blah. So I noticed that even in my own house, it's very important to wipe your leaves down.
Yes.
And that only creates a healthier environment for your plant, because remember, you're actually suffocating your plants if you allow the dust to settle
dust.
Too much. And that in turn can cause. So I always refer to Jacques on the show here, Jenny Sue, because he's very organic, Jeremy, but it's very organic ways to go about it. You can rather try and leave the water, see if it comes back, as you say, Jeremy. Wiping the leaves down, liquid feeding, in my opinion, is one of the best things you can do for indoor plants. It just gives them trace elements and micronutrients back, which
On that, if your plant is healthy, it resists disease much better.
100%.
So making sure that you do use a plant food, and you get the watering right, and then also maybe like the kelp plant hormones and the growth regulators that come in the kelp. And then just having that combo of the kelp and then a plant food like a 315, liquid 315 or 416, whatever. Then if you do that regularly, then your plant is like resilient.
100%.
It's nice and strong, so then it doesn't get the diseases as much as possible.
I tell everybody, Jeremy, that this is a living trade. It's living, It's like you're not going to not feed your child for 2 months, if that makes sense, or bath them, It's the exact same thing. You've got to look at it in that aspect. And if you want healthy indoor plants, you need to look after them,
That's true.
It just works that way, I think. So, as we said, Jeremy, you've got a wonderful selection of insecticides, organic range as well, Jeremy. I think people are going organic in this world we live in. Is there an organic range that they can use, Jeremy?
I know
with organics, it just requires a little bit more attention. Because it's a lot less effective in a sense. Let me reverse that. It's not less effective. It needs more applications, I think.
Because of
its organicness.
Well, it depends on which you're talking about, because organic is such a funny term. I think we've mentioned this before, but organic you can get something registered as organic, but it's at the chemical equivalent is pretty much exactly the same. It's just that it's come from a plant.
Yes.
So like the pyrethrums that come from a chrysanthemum plant is toxic to insects and potentially, well, mammals as well, if you had enough of it. But the chemical equivalent is exactly the same. It's just that they've formulated in a lab. So one is organic and one is not organic. Maybe. But it's the same thing. So you've got to be careful with that, with the organic thing. But what we do have is we've got like the Margaret Roberts garlic one. So it's like a garlic and a chili and mixed in an oil. And that sort of smothers things.
Cooking it on your roast.
Baste your roast with it. And then also like it repels a little bit. But in terms of like, so the, if it's a, let's say a scale and you use the oil one, that'll smother the scale because it forms that oil layer and can't get the oxygen. So that would be like totally organic from that point. But in terms of like having the insecticide that actually kills the insect on contact, it's not not going to do that. But then the other option is also the bio-neem, the neem oil from the neem oil tree. So that is a different story. That one is really good because it actually fiddles with the insects' like life cycle. So if you had to have like, let's say in your veggie garden and you don't want to spray chemicals or even the organic insecticides that have the chemicals in it, even though it's derived from the plant. If you wanted to spray something, you can use the garlic stuff as a preventative, but you could also regularly spray the bio-neem because then it breaks up the life cycle. So if, let's say a moth lays an egg on one of your plants that you've got in your veggie garden, when it's got that neem oil in the vicinity, it somehow disrupts the thing. So when the eggs hatch, then that particular thing
won't come to fruition.
The
next life cycle is affected.
So you're not going to get rid of everything, but it's a good thing to like to use if you want to be like totally organic.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Jeremy, you know, we do try and we all want to be the best we can be in terms of saving the planet. I mean, that's why we recycle, that's why we do everything. You know, there is unfortunate time and a place to hit something. You know, I had done those wonderful pop plants in Halpe that you helped me sort out.
Yeah.
We did the coin oil application, we did the leaf cleaning, and I tell you, they are in full flower now and they look absolutely stunning. So
it's sometimes that it's
you
like
have to, Jeremy. Yeah, you know, you can't get away from it.
Yeah, if it goes too far and the things are being decimated by caterpillars, like sometimes like someone will have a whole lot of fakies. And those little black caterpillars come in, and you've got thousands and thousands. You can't expect.
No, exactly. Like you're not going to sort. I'm actually, funny enough, you mentioned the caterpillar. I've got the Kigelera africana tree.
Oh, yeah.
The white stinkwood, and you get that that caterpillar.
Yes.
But it's like the flat caterpillar that has hair, but they all amalgamate together, and they actually look like a branch.
Yeah.
It comes every year, and the tree in the front of my house, and I do nothing about it because they eat a little bit of the tree. They turn into moths or butterflies, and they dissipate. So
they only eat that tree.
That tree, 100%, Jeremy. Yeah. So I'm not worried about them in any other part of my garden. Something that I noticed last year that was pretty intense in my garden, and so you know I love my roses, was it the chafer beetle, the black with the dotted chafer.
Yeah.
I found that those buggers, not the chafer beetle, they call them stink bugs.
Oh, yeah, that's a story.
Yes, Jeremy, sorry, that's what I'm talking about. Those got onto
those
my roses.
Yeah, those buggers.
Sure, those buggers got absolutely, I literally watch it, Jeremy, and then trying to be organic.
Tip wilters.
That, trying to be organic, and the very next morning, that beautiful bud that I had on my roses is like, So, unfortunately, I got to a point where, I am very organic in my nature. I try not to kill anything, to be honest. I have a little bag that and then I'll go out there in the morning. I'll load them in the bag, and when I take my dog for a walk at the field, I literally just empty them onto the field. You know, I'm not going to, taking five of them out of a life cycle is not going to change them. So I thought I wouldn't kill them, I'd move them. But they're easy to get, Jeremy.
Yes.
And I think that's another way that, I think this is my whole point of what I'm saying is that there are many ways to look for you. If you, they like to come out in the mornings, most insects. So if you're up for it and you're an avid gardener, go outside at 6 a.m., take a plastic packet, you'll find all the snails. You know, you don't have to kill them. You can put them in a bag and take them to the dump. Yes, they can become somebody else's problem, but that's an option. Or you can use snail ban or whatever. But I try not to use certain things, and I don't want to badmouth any products out there, but a snail bait for me is something that I try and avoid, Jeremy, because You know, you just spoke about the very organic way of interrupting a specific insect's life cycle. The thing about that is that a snail will eat it, and then a bird will eat that snail.
Yeah.
And then it will affect the bird, and then a bigger animal can eat the bird. And in my opinion, that's something we have to be careful of. And I don't want to badmouth any products, but when they're that big and easy to find, it's easier to rather pull them.
Yes.
But when you're dealing with a mealybug, which you need a microscope to see,
yes,
or an aphid, it becomes, as I said, a certain amount of effort that you need to put in to get that right, I think, Jeremy.
And then the other, if we go back to like the seasonal stuff that I was speaking about earlier, in sort of March, April, we've talked about this before. I mean, obviously it's a totally different time, but if someone comes and says, oh, my lawn is looking so bad, and, you know, it should actually still be looking pretty good after the summertime. But, you know, that's when we get that lawn caterpillar coming through.
Yes.
And it is a seasonal thing. So it could be at that time. And then also, let's say your grass is looking really bad after the winter. It just could be because it got too much water. It stayed wet, and then 100%. Maybe a little bit of fungus got in.
100%. And I learned something very interesting about lawns this year, as I say. And just so everyone knows, I learned this from Harry Gibbons. So much knowledge I gained from your place. Took into your staff. They're all knowledgeable. But I believe that if you overfeed a grass in the summer period, trying to get it looking green for Christmas, can actually have the effect of it going into winter, Jeremy. Doug was telling me that what happens is because it was like forced to grow, when it gets too cold, it just goes dormant in itself. And it's like it battles to push out those shoots because it's been sort of forced to do that with a high nitrogen aspect. So you're going to get your patches. It's just a case of scarifying, maybe putting down some feed. Organic feed is always good to feed in May to help a root or something of the higher phosphate content so that the roots are healthy through winter. But I agree with you, Jeremy. A lot of people rush. It's the opposite. They panic too much seeing something rather than giving it an opportunity. We all know that grass doesn't look good in winter, and I think you just manage it rather. Cut it high, you know, leave it as is, and then when you get into September, as we've been doing, you can start doing your process, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to also do some pre-emergent sprays if you're really worried about your grass and it's small and it's in deep shade in winter, because it's a problem we have in Cape Town or houses. You have this beautiful sun in summer, and then it shifts its path in winter, and it gets really shady in areas. So doing a pre-emergent spray around beginning of May is always good because weeds grow in winter. I noticed that most of the weeds are winter growers. So if you can catch the seeds before they germinate. And again, you know, we're talking about organicness and the environment. I've noticed, because I'm doing a lot of studying on the labels, a lot of the sprays that we do use are just contact sprays, Jeremy. And once they've dried, the residual effect on the area is actually minimal.
Yeah.
So we are trying to be the best we can be, but we have to do what we need to do as well, you know, in order to live and provide a job that is acceptable to clients. So, and obviously I wouldn't encourage spraying right on a water source or anything like that. Those are logical things that people need a bit of logic to understand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one of the things you mentioned earlier was the Conol, which is a very good, very good systemic insecticide. We talked about this before. It goes into the plant. And that one, because you're also pouring it on the soil rather than spraying, has a much better, less, even though it is a, you know,
contact insecticide. Yeah,
no, systemic. It's a systemic one. So it doesn't have, even though it's quite a, you know, toxic thing, because you're not spraying it.
Yes.
It's more managed because it's
going directed to the root system of that plant.
Into that 100%. Plant. Yeah, much
100%.
Better.
It's like when I unfortunately cut an alien tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes the cost to dig out the roots is actually another day or two because it's so big. So it's actually easier to drill your holes and use that expert.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people, when I put in my quote, they get nervous because the only word I can use for it is a poison, but it's actually a very specified, directed application of it where you paint the roots, the stem, the top of the plant, and you pour a little bit of it into the holes that you've cut or drilled, and it literally only affects that tree and that root. It will eventually kill off the tree. And look, over that period of time, the roots will die off and actually become organic and break down in the ground anyway.
Exactly.
So it's good to know this and not have this major visual that, like, you can't do anything to help your garden. Unfortunately, sometimes you've got to help your garden, I think, Jeremy. So
yeah, the other thing that we had over the weekend, because I was working this weekend, was a couple of people were coming in.
I was packed on Sunday.
Yeah.
I've never been there when I was so busy. I was impressed. You're doing well there, my man.
Thank you. So because of the grass being a little bit, knocked because of all the wet, sometimes the weeds get stuck in quite heavily.
Yes.
And what people seem to be dealing with is that it creeps between the blades of grass, but it's got a very tiny little leaf.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think the broad-leafed weed killers take it out. And it's one of those things where either you're pulling it out, but you're never getting everything, yeah. or you actually have to go with a non-selective weed killer, but not spray. You have to actually paint it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lady that I told that you're going to have to paint.
Did her face drop.
She's like, oh, maybe I'll just mow it.
Yeah, maybe it'll help it grow yeah. wider.
Yeah. So, because she just said it was going to be way too much to handle. But unfortunately, the problem is that, you know, it would be nice if you could spray it with a broadleaf weed killer, but it's not going to get everything. I mean, it's not going to actually be targeted. So you're wasting
yeah.
your time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, I do have one thing that I was just talking to my guys about, because you've got to constantly remind the staff anyway, but the lawn weeds broadleaf spray that you spray in the grass, it works wonderful on lawn. I mean, it really has great results. But what people must be careful of is that everything that's planted around your grass, in theory, is a broadleaf.
Yeah.
So that's why it's very important to not spray on windy days. And I think just some knowledge needs to get passed on to people that think they can just set up a spray, because they'll go and spray next to their beautiful agapanther bed, for example, yeah. which is planted right. And you know how aggies sort of lay over grass, and they spray the edge, you know, and then they sort of think, sure, what happened? My agapanther is all going yellow in there.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that you do have to be careful. Mm. So there's always things and factors that you've got to factor in. And the one problem we do have in Cape Town is the wind.
Yeah. Difficult to find it still there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a product we use called glyphosate or Roundup for paving. When you really, so a lot of people scrape their paving, and I said to them, look, you know, the weirder part about that is, and that's why you never spray it in the rain, because if it rains and it takes it into the gutters and then down into storm water, you can affect that. But that's why you do it on a very warm day, a very dry day. Mm. And again, once you spray the weed in the paving, it absorbs it and it dries, the residual is gone. But my point being is that when you start scraping it out with a scraper, you're actually removing all the grout out between the pavers as well, and you're actually causing further problems down the yeah. line. Your paving will collapse, the weeds will just keep growing there because there's no cement. So it's actually better sometimes to talk to the professionals and see what way you can go. And that's just how it is, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you scrape a bit of the grout out, and then some sand goes in there, and then it's just making a bed.
A bed. You might as well plant the weeds.
Planting extra weeds. Yeah, exactly.
100%. Well, Jimmy, I think the problem is we've used all our time, and now we're not going to be able to talk about October. Because it's just like we talk that way, Jeremy. That's us, man.
Well, we still got a few more minutes.
You've got 5 minutes.
You've got time.
I'll leave it in your capable hands, Jeremy.
Well, I'm gonna...
So now we're going to talk about what to do for the month of October. And again, Jeremy, what I love about this show is that, you know, this sort of conversation you're having, we can spill this over in 2 weeks' time. If people ask questions, maybe Sue, you can let us know between the weeks and we can answer them, you know. So, but I think for now, Jeremy, you're going to finish off there with what to do for the month of October.
Yeah, I thought it would be a thing.
It's a pleasure, Jeremy. Hand it over to you, baby. My job is done.
Jeremy is getting you back. You know why? Because you weren't here the last time. Yeah. And now he's making you do it all.
Because Jeremy's very good at what he does.
We got veggie planting time now as well, because the tomatoes are coming in. So tomatoes, the green peppers, the eggplants, brinjals, you know, squash and cucumbers. I think my wife took a whole lot of stuff Saturday. To put in our veggie patches. So, and then things like the lettuce and the spinach, those are all going as well now. Basil, oh yes, we got 100 basil six packs in last week. And then I think we sold them all over the weekend. So yes, wow. It was a busy weekend. the sweet basil is in, and it's a good time for that. And the thyme and the parsley and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, the petunias are coming through now.
Oh, nice. We spoke about those the last 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You said they're actually sustaining themselves quite nicely now as well.
Yeah, so the petunias that we still don't have a lot with flowers on, but it's coming. And then, the gazanias.
Yeah.
Also, we had 300 trays, and we got like 50 left.
They're just one of the most prolifically flowering, most beautiful. I'm not a fan of the repens, unfortunately, Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah.
I find the repens is so if you've got a house on the coast and you want to cover an area, plant the repens, and it is just the most incredible creeper.
Yeah.
But it literally swallows everything else up in its path as it moves, that yellow one.
Yes.
But all the other ones are spectacular,
Yeah, there's good colors in that.
Yeah. And I never knew that the osteospermum was actually known as the daisy, South African daisy.
Okay.
They called that. I was Googling it for a client the other day.
Yes.
I love the osteospermums. Also indigenous, the beautiful blue. I know that the purple one's hard to get at the moment, though. So they're more white now. It's very strange because I found that about 6 months ago, and now I see it's sustained itself that.
Yeah, well, we had a couple of people asking for the six packs of the creeping one. and we could only get the variegated leaf one, which is not as prolific and nice in terms of like covering big areas. So it's still a very nice looking plant and still will grow really nicely, but it's not the common one, and we just can't get the common one. It's just kind of weird. Okay, so yeah, we've talked about these weeds coming through.
Yep.
So lots of weeding, because you don't want to have your plants having to compete with the weeds, especially now, because your plants want to grow.
100%.
And if you're going to be fertilizing, you don't want to be fertilizing 100%. Those weeds.
This goes
weeds.
Back to our conversation months ago about mulch, so mulching is it, when you layer it down.
Is it time now to mow your lawn? I know you've got to wait. Was it
you should have mowed yesterday, Sue. No, it is. It's time to start mowing. And if you've got a good irrigation system like we always talk about, which you know I'm a fan of because it puts the water in the right place, and it's working well, then you probably, if you've got cuckoo, you have to start mowing every week almost already. If you're feeding
so you need to start now.
Yeah.
Because I know we've had very, very wet.
Well,
so.
In fact, you should have about 2 weeks ago already have, maybe even a month ago, have done a feed to get your grass out of its dormancy.
Okay.
Something with a high root content, not a fast nitrogen growth.
Yes.
Then you watered it well for 2 to 3 weeks, and now you are going to probably do your first very low cut. And you're going to do that for a week, and then you probably can apply another like 10-1-1 in another week or two. You want to give it at least 6 weeks after your last feed, and then that's going to be your feed going, taking that grass into amazing state for Christmas and that.
And we need to be careful with the snake.
And you want
snake season as well, so we need to watch.
But if you've got a home and you're mowing a lot in that, the snakes are scared of noise.
Yeah,
that,
well, so I'm glad about that.
Yeah. If you live on the side of the mountain at the back here, you might be in trouble.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and then the other thing that happened over the weekend, I'm also referring to the weekend, we sold out of irrigation, some irrigation stuff, because just people are waking up to, obviously, the warmer weather now. So, refreshing your irrigation systems, putting your irrigation systems in if you need to, and get things going on. Obviously, the wind is here and the sun is here, so if you are planting some stuff, just keep it...
Wind? Who's the wind of that?
Yeah, a little. Oh, yeah.
Yes, we got some.
No, it is bad already today.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. If your grass, because like that that customer that came in with that weed, so the one customer said, okay, well, she's going to pull out some of the things. She's not going to paint, which is obviously short-term solution because there's still going to be bits and pieces of those roots there. So it's going to come back, but at least she can get something going, and then she could overseed or put in the little plugs, and because the soil is now warmer, the seed will germinate nicely and take nicely, and the plugs will grow fast. So if she can get her grass to be in really nice solid condition, then it hopefully will start strangling out the weeds. But it's an ongoing process she's going to go that route.
Look, I mean, you just got sometimes get a guy in there with a weeding fork. If you want to,
days and days.
It happens.
So is that it?
We can stop there.
Yes, we can stop.
Is it time?
Well,
it's past time.
No.
We got 2 minutes. So if you want to roll for 2 minutes, you're welcome.
I think. Well, the one thing that just we've spoken about so many times, but it's a good time to put some mulch down on your beds as well, because of the wind and the heat. You know, if you're going to spend some money on a garden that's pretty much established, a good thing that you can do is mulch.
All right. So is there anything else you want to share?
No. Just my number. Jeremy was the man today. As I said, I'm grateful. He's on it today.
So David,
he looks amazing in his uniform. He looks good today.
So David, would you mind giving your number, please?
So the number you can WhatsApp the studio on. No, I'm just teasing. My number is 073-247-0351. That's if you need to contact me for anything. And obviously, Harry Goodman's down the road. Do you want to give out the landline number, Jeremy?
021-785-3201.
Well, it was an awesome chat this morning, I might say. And you will be back in 2 weeks' time?
Back in 2 weeks' time. Right, so I can get more knowledge from you, Mr. Finn. Thank you, sir. Have a good day. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. See you in 2 weeks' time. Ciao, ciao.
This gardening feature was brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humans Garden Center.